Coming up on Chasing the Natty, Week 0 gave us the appetizer we were hoping for with close matchups and everything else we love about college football. It also gave a sneak peek at a few teams and some potential early waiver claims. We'll dive into the takeaways from the 5 FBS games from this past weekend and touch on a few notes out of fall camps that are still cropping up. All of that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus to Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com. Subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether that's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Best Ball Tournaments. If you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, you can make sure you do that by making sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers over at campusofcanton.com, you use the promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off of your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. You can't do that? Totally fine. You can just show us some love by leaving a like, comment, and a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, just leave a 5-star review. Make sure you are following the show. That way you don't miss any of the stuff. And not only does that show us support, but also the entire game of college fantasy football in general. If you have any further questions or want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And y'all, we made it. We made it. We got actual live football this past weekend. Boy, I can't remember an offseason where I was just itching so much by the time week zero got. Not that I don't enjoy the offseason. In fact, I love the offseason. I love the speculation and everything. But boy, I will fully admit, I was just so itching for a lot of my questions to finally get answered. It felt like I had really dug into every team that I possibly could. I had found the information that was going to be available to me. And I just was at the point where I'm like, all right, let's get to this. Let's find out what's actually going to happen here now. And week zero, as always, like I said in the intro, just kind of gives us that appetizer, gives us just a couple teams for us to really start diving into here. And that is exactly what we will be doing today. I'm going to be diving into each of the 5 games. This isn't what we're normally going to do. For those of you who've been watching CTN for years, you know that I'm not really much of a game breakdown kind of guy, at least for fantasy purposes and everything. It's just a lot easier on week zero because there's just so few games and I can really dive into all the different takeaways we can possibly do. But going forward, we will be doing our weekly waiver show. For those of you that have watched the show before, you know exactly how that goes. In fact, actually, let me go ahead and talk about what exactly is going to happen with in-season content. A lot of you, like I said, who've been watching for years, you know typically what I do. And for the most part, things are going to remain the same, but there are going to be a few changes this year. So I'll kind of run through that real quick. The thing that's not changing at all is that weekly waiver wire show. Like, that is going to be completely the same. I'll be providing my top 5 at quarterback, running back, and wide receiver for waiver wire pickups each week, as well as the top 3 at tight end, assuming that I think there are that many per week to discuss. You guys know in college fantasy, by the time we get down to, like, you know, weeks 10, 11, 12, like, it gets real hard to convince yourself that a lot of those guys are really worth pickups off the waiver wires unless, you know, circumstances change, guys get injured, stuff like that. Those shows will still always include my waiver wire traps, which are basically my anti-waiver picks. The guys that, you know, score a ton of points that I'm like, oh, whoa, hold the horses. I don't know if that's really a guy you need to be picking up off the waiver wire. I will also include the freakout scale, which you guys seem to love. It's a really good way for us to kind of gauge, you know, should we hold on to this player? Should they stay on our roster? How exactly should we be using them? Should I start them with confidence? Was it just a variance thing? All of that will still be the same. That show is not going anywhere. It is still going to be released Mondays at your normal CTN time. The written content for that will, of course, also be over at campusdecanton.com, where I will provide my weekly waiver wire article. The thing that is going to be done differently this year is the start-sit show. Unfortunately, I am not in college anymore, and my schedule isn't quite as flexible as it used to be back in college, especially in grad school. I really could just, if I wanted to, you know, do a ton of grad school work the other days and then leave Tuesdays alone for me to, you know, look at people's start-sit questions, research them, provide the whole show sheet and everything, provide a really, really good product for you guys when it came to that. And I really did enjoy doing it, and I did like the product that I was putting out, but like I said, unfortunately my schedule doesn't really allow for that anymore. And last year I tried to do what I normally do, where I would reach out to you guys, get the start sit questions from you guys, pick a few, do the whole show around it, and just being quite frankly with you guys, like it burned me out a ton. I was struggling as we were going down the stretch. So this year I'm still doing a start-sit show, but again, we're going to do it differently. Instead of getting the questions ahead of time and releasing the show on like Wednesday morning and stuff like that, I'm just going to go live here on the channel on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then go until about 9 o'clock answering start-sit questions live for those who are in the chat. Again, unfortunately, this means I won't be able to go as deep with my research to answer those questions like I've done in the past, but it'll certainly kind of help me out when it comes to keeping everything balanced. And I do think you guys will enjoy it a little bit in the fact that, you know, there'll be a little bit of back and forth as well. You can ask questions directly that maybe aren't necessarily start-sit questions. Really, it'll be more of like an office hours that is mostly based around start-sit questions. But again, you guys can come in and ask questions and we can have a chat and talk and stuff like that. It won't just always be me. Again, there'll be some people who hop in from time to time guesting on it. We'll still have a great time. But again, it's not going to be quite the same what we were doing before. And those live shows, for those of you who are wondering, I do plan to export them and release them in podcast form the next day. So if you are still one of these people who wants the show in podcast form only, you're ready to listen to me Wednesday morning, you don't have time to listen to me at night, totally understand. The plan is still to have those shows exported so that you can listen to them Wednesday morning on the podcast form. So all that being said, I'm yapping enough here, but I did want to take some time to really kind of discuss exactly what's going to happen now that we're getting into the season. The in-season grind is here. You guys know exactly how much that can be sometimes if you've played college fantasy before. So just so everybody knows, again, basically waiver wire show is staying the same. Start sit show, we are switching from a pre-recorded, pre-planned fully show and everything, and we are going to switch to a live show that'll just run for an hour on Tuesday nights. And again, really will serve more of an office hours type thing than an actual pre-planned show. Again, I'll be honest, it's not quite my preferred way is like having a ton of time to answer all of your questions in depth and everything, but unfortunately that is just not what my life lets me do at this point. And so this is, I think, the best way for me to be able to still provide you guys that content in some way, even if it's not quite the same we've done before. Anyway, rambling over, let's get to the part of the show you guys actually want to discuss, and that is what happened during week zero. I got so many of you DMing me yesterday, and don't get me wrong, I love DMs, I love talking to you guys, but all of you just ready to ask, oh, should I pick this guy up on the waiver wire? Should I do this? Y'all, I will give you all of my thoughts. A lot of times, I think people don't realize is I'm not a super reactionary person, like in the moment. I like to kind of sit back and, you know, do my research afterwards, make sure there's nothing I'm missing. Because again, trust me, I saw some of those big performances yesterday. I wanted to, you know, there's part of me that was ready to jump on some of those guys immediately. But, you know, I like being able to take my time, formulate my thoughts, and then in this format right here where I can just talk to you guys and I can really kind of write everything out exactly how I want to present these players to you, I think that helps out a little bit more. And again, if I didn't DM you back or anything, like, I promise you, one, nothing personal whatsoever. One, I get a lot of DMs about these players and everything, and a lot of messages slip through the cracks sometimes. But also, two, if I don't DM you back about a certain player, usually that means that I'm going to talk about them on the show. And that's exactly what's going to happen here. So let's dive into it. Let's get over to what you guys want to talk about. Let's talk about some week zero reactions and everything. So like I said in the opener, we'll go through all five of the major games here and the major takeaways that kind of come with that. And for those of you who follow our articles over at campusdecanton.com, you know that on Saturday morning, I dropped an article on six different questions I was looking to see get answered on this past Saturday. And a lot of these reactions will have a lot to do with answering those questions that I raised. And, you know, some of them, we still don't have answers, which we'll get into, even though we actually did see some players play. So let's start with Kansas State versus Iowa State, the ranked v ranked matchup that we got here on week zero, two Big 12 favorites here. And, you know, both clearly a little rusty. Again, it's week zero, it's week one. A lot of teams are going to not look as great out the gate, right? Happens every single year. It takes some teams to get going a little bit. But, you know, this game ended in about your typical football fashion, 24-21. I think might be the most common football score ever. I'd have to go check like what the Scorigami stuff says and everything. But that feels like if you were going to ask me, like, what's the default score for the end of a football game, I would say 24-21. Anyway, well, one major takeaway from each team here, and I would say on Kansas State, we obviously got to talk about Dylan Edwards getting injured on the very first touch of really the game for Kansas State, because it was on a kick, it was on a punt return, and Dylan Edwards fumbled the ball. He got hit on the play, turned the ball over, and then we just didn't see him after that. And we got reports from the likes of, you know, Pete Nakos and all these guys where, you know, he was, you know, they're looking at his ankle, and then he was in the locker room. And then at halftime, we got the confirmation from Coach Kleiman that he would be out for the rest of the game. So, yeah, how do we handle this? Well, first of all, I will say, for those of you who drafted Edwards and then Joyner to start your leagues, my condolences. The heartburn medication refill is on its way. But the other takeaway really here to me is that thankfully, this doesn't really look like it's going to be any kind of, you know, season-ending injury, just based on my admittedly poor eye for these sort of things. The hit that caused him to fumble really wasn't that big of a hit, and, you know, there wasn't any obvious bend or break to his ankles when you watch back the film and everything. Clearly something there. Otherwise, I don't know why Kansas State would just hold him out the rest of the game. Like, he's clearly one of their most important players this year. But all in all, regardless of what actually happens, how long he's held out and everything, this whole situation sucks, right? You hate seeing any sort of uncertainty when it comes to a guy we are drafting in the first round. And, you know, the question I raised in the article before week zero was that I wanted to see what kind of split we were going to see between Joe Jackson and Dylan Edwards. Like, when both of them are out there, are we going to get a split heavy enough to where we start regretting taking Dylan Edwards in the first round? Well, obviously we end up regretting taking him now because there's a possibility he might miss time. But we also still don't have a good answer as to what it looks like when both Dylan Edwards and Joe Jackson are out there on the field. Instead, we got mostly Joe Jackson kind of getting the RB1 reps into this game because Edwards was out. Again, we just have no idea whether he was getting those reps because that was pre-planned, or if it was because, you know, because Edwards wasn't out there and Joe Jackson had to suck up those reps. So that question's still up in the air. It also really doesn't help that just Iowa State during this entire game bottled up Kansas State's running game. Like, outside of Jace Brown's 33-yard jet sweep, like, KSU ran 26 times for 77 yards or just under 3 yards a pop. Like, nothing in the running game is working for Kansas State. So even if Dylan Edwards was out there, I'm still not entirely sure that we would have seen his best performance there. I would say for those of you who did draft Edwards, like, I do think Joe Jackson's pretty much a must pickup for just insurance purposes, right? Like, yes, Jackson didn't look great on Saturday, but like I just said, nobody in that KSU running game really did. Even Avery Johnson didn't look great. So until Edwards is back, I think Jackson's kind of your clear RB1 for Kansas State. It'll be fun week to week trying to figure out, all right, is Edwards back this week? Is he not? Unfortunately, that's just part of the game. Thankfully, Big 12 now requires injury reports, so I'm sure we'll get a nice, healthy dose of questionable for Dylan Edwards over the next couple of weeks, and just making that so much fun all around. So, but again, as much as I would love to give you guys an answer of like, yeah, Edwards will be back in 3 weeks. He could be back tomorrow. He could be back 6 games from now. I have zero clue because I'm not in that medical tent. So, and again, even if you are in that medical tent, these things change all the time. Guys recover faster than you expect. Guys recover slower than you expect. So many variables. Anyway, enough of Dylan Edwards and Kansas State. Again, basically the takeaway there is if you had Edwards, I would say go grab Joe Jackson. Even if you don't have Edwards, Joe Jackson's worth a pickup. But if you had Edwards, I think Jackson, you have to go and pick up just to try to keep up with that Kansas State backfield there. Anyway, the other takeaway from this game is, boy, oh boy, the Iowa State wide receiver situation is a mess. And I think we as a CFF community just completely misread this entire offseason. I don't have the freakout scale for this week, but, you know, Chase Sewell is a massive red alert right now. Same with Xavier Townsend, even though, you know, he was obviously taken a lot later. So I'm not, like, as surprised about Townsend not really working out. But Sewell really shocked a lot of people in what he did yesterday and the fact that he didn't do anything, right? The top three wide receivers for Iowa State were Brett Eskildson, yes, Dominic Overby, and Eli Green, just like we all predicted, right? Well, everybody except the Iowa State depth chart, actually, we got last week. Turns out that wasn't lying to us. It had those three listed as starters, and a lot of us were like, oh, they must be playing some gamesmanship here. Nope. They gave us exactly who was going to start, and those were the guys that started, right? Chase Sewell was third in pass snaps for the Cyclones yesterday. He had 13 versus 20 for both Eskildson and Overby. Townsend was seventh among the receivers with 8 total pass snaps. So obviously, just not only were they rotating a lot at receiver yesterday, but Sewell and Townsend were both very clear backups, at least to start for this first game. Now, there is still technically hope that both of these guys could increase their workload as the season goes on. But, you know, given the fact they weren't getting starting snaps in this game, I kind of doubt it. It doesn't help that the 3 targets that Chase Sewell got, he didn't bring in any of them yesterday, including a very nasty drop. I can't remember if it was on 3rd or 4th down, but it was one that Kansas State would need later on. And so how are we dealing with this? I was never really in on Xavier Townsend in this offense. So if you have him, I recommend he's an instant drop, but I'm probably not the best person to ask when it comes to that. Sewell, I would hold on to in deeper leagues, but it really isn't looking good. I would quite frankly say because of the fact that he got such a low snap count in this game and there's no real talk of him being hurt. I know Moxley kind of brought up there's like some kind of rumor, but he wouldn't have played 13 snaps if he was really that hurt. So I think that Sewell in a shallow league, yeah, go ahead and drop him. There's going to be a ton of waiver options week one. Go pick up somebody that you kind of like elsewhere from this past weekend, like a Jackson Harris, maybe like a Jaden Bradley. We'll get to all those guys in a second here, but I think Sewell is probably our first real big whiff as a CFF community this year because this was a dude being taken in like the 4th, 5th round of drafts, and for a lot of people, they're wide receiver one. So, yeah. Yeah, we whiffed on this Iowa State wide receiver room. And the unfortunate thing is it doesn't seem like any of the other guys, like Overby or Eskildson, none of them are really stepping up and being like, oh yeah, no, I'm actually who Jaden Higgins was last year. No, they're all just kind of eh. There's no like guy that you're looking at being like, oh, I gotta go pick him up. I just had the wrong guy, but this system's still great. Still got to go get our guy. It's just not there. If you had to pick one, probably would be Overby. But even still, like, I wasn't super impressed with what I saw from him yesterday. So maybe that changes next week when, you know, Iowa State destroys. I think they play South Dakota. Maybe Overby has a great game in that game and we just kind of go from there. Let's move on to the second game of yesterday, and we are going to go just in chronological order here, not in terms of order of importance here. So that's why we're going to discuss UNLV versus Idaho State here. And the 3 main takeaways I have here each have to do with one of the major positions of, you know, UNLV. I'm not going to do anything about Idaho State, even though there clearly are some players on there that if Idaho State was in CFF, oh boy, I'd love to get involved. But we're obviously focused on the Rebels here. The first takeaway for me is the quarterback situation. And, you know, as expected, we did see both quarterbacks play in this game. But I think based on what we saw here, Calandria is going to ultimately be named the starter, I think sooner rather than later. Like, with Calandria, you actually feel comfortable throwing the ball. He had 21 pass attempts in this game compared to only 3 for Orji. You have a downfield threat with Calandria. His ADOT was 9.1 in this game compared to only 2.7 for Orji. Like, you might, some might say, or you might say that Orji, you know, provides better rushing. Maybe in the long term, I do think, yeah, he's got the higher upside when it comes to the rushes, but, like, Calandria provides enough. Heck, in this very game, he had 13 rushes for 117 yards. Like, I think this is Calandria's team. I think he provides everything that this staff needs in a starting quarterback. Yes, is he going to be careless with the ball sometimes? Yeah, I think so, but you're also UNLV. You're playing in the Mountain West. You're going to be in some shootouts. You're going to be in some situations where you're going to need things to get weird. I still think that Calandria just overall has the best skills versus, like, Orji, you become basically a solo threat offense, and that just doesn't really work. I think this is Calandria's team, with Orji, you know, kind of being a nuisance for goal line touches. In terms of what Calandria means for CFF down the line, I actually think that, you know, he should be picked up in quite a few leagues. Like, I'm getting flashbacks to how Devin Dampier started the season last year for New Mexico, right? New Mexico struggled against an FCS school, but you saw some flashes, right? And given that Calandria had 100 yards on the ground in his toolbox, and he has that upside, plus the UNLV defense just stinks, I think Calandria is absolutely worth rostering. Like, his draft percentage according to Fantrax is 16%. I don't know how much I really trust that. I don't know how that's calculated and everything. It feels kind of low. But if that is true, if it is only 16%, like, it should be way higher than that by the end of the week. I think Calandria's got incredible upside. I know a lot of people are like, well, like, they struggled against an FCS team and a bad one at that with Idaho State. That's fine. I think they'll still put up points each week. I think Dan Mullen will get some things figured out. I don't think the offense is what's going to struggle. That defense is going to struggle, and that's going to force them to score every single week. Other takeaway I have from this game is to do with the running game, right? Dan Mullen likes himself a committee, but I kind of think that Jet Thomas might force his hand. I think we might have one of our first committee busters of the season here, right? And for those of you who don't know, like, a committee buster is, you know, you have systems that typically love to split the carries between, you know, 3 different guys, or usually it's around 3 guys, maybe 2 guys, 3 guys, 4 guys, right? Regardless, what it really means is that nobody's getting enough touches to really be a CFF relevant back. But a committee buster is a guy that kind of forces the staff to get him more touches and to get him and to potentially put him in a workhorse role. And I'm looking at Jet Thomas, or Jaden Thomas, as some people might know him as. And I think that's what we might potentially have here, right? Like, Thomas is a guy we've had our eye on for a while in the CFF community. Like, he had double-digit touchdowns as a freshman, and since then, he's kind of been stuck in a running back committee systems. Like, I've avoided Jaden Thomas up until now because I thought that would once again happen with Dan Mullen as head coach. He likes committee, and especially with them having the likes of Jalen Glover and Kevon Lee on the roster, he really felt like we were set up for another year of disappointment here. Then Thomas did what he did yesterday, right? He ripped off 147 yards and 3 touchdowns on only 10 carries. Like, that was almost 15 yards a pop he was doing yesterday. Just absolutely nuts. Meanwhile, against that same defense, Jalen Glover averaged only 4 yards a carry, and Kaden Lee didn't even average a yard per carry. Like, Thomas was clearly the best running back in this UNLV system yesterday. And I harp on systems, you know, having preferences towards committees, but like I said, every year we see guys become these committee busters. I think Thomas is absolutely on his way to becoming one, especially if he can put together some good performances against Sam Houston, Miami of Ohio, Wyoming. If we start to see a trend where he's getting more and more carries, I think he's absolutely in for a huge, huge year. Again, we could see a really, really big jump from, you know, sophomore to junior year here for Jaden Thomas. And then he'll probably transfer at the end of the year and we'll all be sad. Last takeaway here is about wide receiver Jaden Bradley. I kind of go back and forth on this one, right? Like, Bradley, for those of you that don't know, is a transfer from Pittsburgh. Very much kind of flew under the radar with, you know, the likes of Troy Omiri, JoJo Earl, Dede Reynolds, another guy from Pittsburgh coming into this wide receiver room. Just not a guy that we were really thinking about at all. But on Saturday, he led the team in targets with 7 compared to 3 for Irving Jr. and 3 for Omiri. So clearly, Calandria was looking for Bradley quite a bit. He led the team in pass snaps, so he was out there quite a lot. He had 21.8 yards per catch. He had the highest ADOT on the team among the starting receiving options, which includes the tight end. Again, it's early in the season, but like if I'm in a deep league, I'll take a shot on Bradley. I think that, again, I'm a little hesitant because, again, ultimately UNLV threw 24 passes yesterday between Calandria and Orji, so they're not going to be a pass-heavy team. They got rushing quarterbacks. They got Jet Thomas and 2 other really good running backs. They're going to mostly want to run the ball. But it does strike me when a guy like this, like Bradley, leads his team in so many categories that tell me that, you know, this staff likes this guy a lot. Again, when you're leading in targets, when you're leading in pass snaps, when you're, you know, the most efficient wide receiver on the team, when you're getting high value targets down the field, I have to say, I think that Brad, like I said, I think Bradley's worth a pickup on waiver wires this week. Definitely somebody that I, or in deeper leagues at the very least. Again, I'm still not entirely there if I want to, or entirely sure if I want to be there for, you know, seeing him as a must own in every single league. The only guy that I would say about that is a guy we'll discuss later. But for now, we're going to move on to the Fresno State Kansas game here. And kind of 3 main takeaways here, 2 on the Kansas side, 1 on the Fresno side. 1, Jalen Daniels, God bless you, sir. He looks like the best he has in years. He looks healthy. Obviously, it's only 1 game. It was against a G5 opponent in Fresno State. But, you know, Daniels looked really, really good. You know, he was 18 for 21, 176 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had another 54 yards on the ground. You know, not a monster day by any means for CFF purposes, not quite the game breaker we saw a few years ago. But, you know, this game, I think, makes you feel good enough that if you did draft him late in leagues this year, which, again, you know, you could find him kind of floating around like, you know, round 15, round 20 this year. If you did pick him up in that range, you're feeling pretty good about him, right? Again, you're not probably not going to get the 30-point upside guy week to week here. But if he gets into a shootout in the Big 12, he could end up being a ton of fun. I think, he got a little banged up in this game. There's already some talks about him kind of getting nicked up and everything. But I think that, you know, good signs all around for Jalen Daniels. The other player to really note on Kansas's team from this past week is Cam Pickett, who led the team in several categories, right? There's a little bit of hype coming into the season for him. Nothing crazy, but kind of enough to be noteworthy. But then, against Fresno State, 6 targets, 6 receptions, 77 yards, 2 touchdowns. Easily the best day among the wide receivers. But here's the thing. I'm not quite ready to say that he's a must-add for waivers. Obviously, deeper league, yeah. Go ahead and take him a shot. But the highest Lance Leopold wide receiver we've gotten in the last 2 years is wide receiver 57. That was Luke Grimm last year. He finished as wide receiver 57 in 2024. You know, a guy that's rosterable, but not really a guy that you're dying to play this each week, right? Pickett had a good stat line. Like I said, 6 for 6, 77 yards, 2 touchdowns. Hard to ask for more than that. But how much are you willing to really rely on a guy each week that had the following, right? He only had 6 targets, so we're not talking about a monster level of volume here. He caught all 6 of those targets, which you know you can't really rely on each week. He only had 12 snaps the entire game where he was a receiving option. So he was hyper-efficient in his opportunities, which is obviously something you want to see, right? Like, you're not going to take a shot on a guy that isn't doing that. And that'll probably earn him some more snaps going forward, but it is something to note, and it is something that I think you can't really say is going to change, at least in the first half of the season. That might change as it goes along. But then you got a guy like Emmanuel Henderson, right? He led the team in pass snaps by a good margin, 2nd most targets. I wouldn't be shocked if this ends up being a situation where things kind of go back and forth between Henderson and Pickett, depending on which target the defense tends to, you know, blanket each week. The other one might pop open. I'm not quite ready to say that Pickett is a clear pickup for waivers. But again, if you're in a really, really deep league, like, I'm not going to blame you whatsoever. And then last but not least, again, this is a bit of a minor freak out scale segment and everything. But obviously, Bryson Donaldson in this game, not a great day. 11 carries, 34 yards, one catch for 39 yards, only 12 touches on the day. You're all sitting there thinking like, oh my God, been drafting this guy in the second round, third round, maybe. Like, I'm expecting a workhorse here. This dude looked awesome last year. Why is he getting, you know, split carries with Elijah Gillum still and Rayshon Luke got 7 touches in this game? Oh no, what's going on here? Guys, I'm not too freaked. This, I think, had way more to do with the game script. I mean, Fresno State fell behind early, and the fact that Fresno State's offensive line was just getting destroyed the entire game. Like, the entire team ran for 2.6 yards per carry. Donaldson ran for 3.1 yards per carry, right? The backs were being hit in the backfield the whole day. There was just nothing Donaldson was really able to do. The hope is that'll change once, you know, they're not facing a Power 4 opponent. They're facing some G5 opponents coming up. I think personally that the staff, because Donaldson played almost the entire first drive for Fresno State. The only time they brought him out was after he ripped off the 39-yard catch. Dude was gassed. They had to bring him out, and they threw out some of the spell running backs out there. But I think personally that this ended up being that the staff wanted to preserve Donaldson. They saw that offensive line. They saw the running backs getting hit in the backfield all day. They're like, we're going to get our star running back killed if we keep him out there. So I think they took him out of the game relatively early, threw him out there so that people weren't questioning what was up every once in a while. But the good news for Donaldson owners, things just get easier from here. I'll run through the schedule real quick. Georgia Southern, Oregon State, Southern, Hawaii, Nevada, Colorado State, San Diego State, Boise State, Wyoming, Utah State, San Jose State. Is there really a team on there that you're thinking, all right, they're the same degree as Kansas's defense? I don't really think so. I think that Donaldson will be fine in the long term, and we'll probably see that this upcoming week once they face Georgia Southern. So that's it for Fresno State, Kansas. Let's move on to Sam Houston and Western Kentucky, my most anticipated matchup of the weekend. Two great CFF potential offenses going up against each other. Had a lot of questions in this game. I mentioned the wide receivers in the article I wrote before the weekend. But really, it was beyond that. It was a running back situation. It was how do the quarterbacks look and everything like that. There's just so many questions that need to be answered. And I think we got plenty of them here, and then some other things are just ugh. We'll start off with Maverick MacGyver, right? Been drafted all offseason. A lot of people have been taking him and everything. This is, you know, Tyson Helton's offense. For the most part, I mean, Rick Bowie's calling the plays, but again, they're going to do the air raid. We all know that's what they like to do, and boy, did we get it. MacGyver's stat line this game, 33 for 51, 407 yards, 3 touchdowns. He also had a touchdown and 17 yards on the ground. And really, I'm starting to get questions of, like, you know, you had MacGyver kind of low. Is he potentially the next Bailey Zappi, and you're missing out on him? And here's the thing. Bailey Zappi, we need to remember, was like a once-in-a-generation kind of deal, right? Like, dude passed for almost 5,000, or over 5,000 yards. Like, just absolutely insane video game numbers. And it was just lightning striking in a bottle, right? MacGyver's off to a really good start here. No doubt about it. But there's a couple of things we need to keep in mind. One, I do think we need to keep in mind that Sam Houston's defense might legitimately just be terrible this year, right? They lost 16 of their top tacklers from last year's team. They're 133rd in returning defensive production. This could have just been a really early great matchup for Western Kentucky for them to, you know, take advantage of, right? I will say, like, at halftime, I was kind of worried about MacGyver because I think he was still, like, I can't remember what his halftime stat line, but I remember looking at his halftime stat line being like, ooh, not quite as, like, you know, productive as I was really expecting. And then things really turned on in the second half. That passing game really clicked, especially in that last fourth quarter. Western Kentucky just absolutely diced up Sam Houston's defense to finish the game. So, like, with all that being said, like, do I think MacGyver in this Western Kentucky, like, this is, you know, 2021 Western Kentucky Bailey Zappi 2.0 here? No. especially with him only getting 11 games instead of 12 for CFF purposes. I think that'll kind of slow things down just a little bit. But no doubt, and I said this in a deep quarterback class, like, he's still a very solid starter each week. And against the COSA schedule, yeah, I'd be happy to roll him out every single week, right? The guy that I am fully ready to go off on and fully ready to say wheels up on is Matthew Henry. I think he needs to be 100% owned by the end of this week. If you want to talk about must pickups, like, he could be in for a monster year. Again, I just mentioned they threw 51 times in this game, and they didn't frankly even really need to, right? They were in control of this game for most of the game. They could have ran the ball a little bit more, but again, they're an air raid. That's what they're going to do. And Henry's going to get his every single week. He had 13 targets, 7 receptions, 148 yards, and a touchdown in this game. 21.1 yards per reception, an ADOT of 21.1 yards. Dude is getting high value targets in a pass happy system, high volume of targets. You legitimately cannot ask for much better, right? They're going to throw it every single week. He is, quite frankly, easily their best wide receiver, just based on the plays he was making last night. Clearly seemed to be MacGyver's favorite guy to find. And I kid you not, this is the kind of guy that has potential to be a top 10 wide receiver overall for the season. Like, just because of the system that he's playing in, just because of how efficient he was. Again, it was Sam Houston's defense. I'm trying not to be hypocritical here. They were missing a lot of guys, so maybe it's not as great every single week. But regardless, like I said, it's a pass-happy system. He's the number one option in that offense. Pretty clearly, it seems. He's must-own. Just simply must-own. The secondary option in this room, I think, pretty clearly from what we saw yesterday, is Musa Barry. Played second most snaps last night. 8 targets, 6 receptions, 96 yards. Plays on the opposite side of, you know, Matthew Henry. They're the two outside wide receivers. The slot receivers seem to still be kind of figuring some stuff out. Hutchinson's there. Jairus Mack is there. No clear guy there in the slot, but Barry and Henry were getting a ton of high-value targets last night. I think they're both worth rostering. I think Henry is the must-own, though. Before I get to the Sam Houston side of this game, though, I do want to do a quick side note that true freshman Marvis Parrish intrigues me. I've seen a couple of people saying that he is a must-own guy because of, you know, what Rick Bowie did last year. I'll get to that in a second. But just flat on its face, like, a true freshman running back getting 18 touches in a game, including 6 through the air, that's pretty significant. Like, no doubt about it, right? And like I mentioned, Rick Bowie, no stranger to a workhorse back. Just last year, Sam Hicks was phenomenal in this system. In 14 games, he had 210 attempts. Now, again, like, if you extrapolate that to 12 games, you're probably looking at about like 190 attempts, but clearly Parrish can make up for that with, you know, some work out of the backfield. Two, if we're in an air raid system and we got a running back that is, you know, hitting 150 carries and he could end up being like, what did Parrish have last night? I think like 7 targets. Obviously, I'm not expecting this the whole season, but, you know, if he even got close to, you know, getting 5 targets a game and ending with 60 targets on the season, in addition to like 120, 130 carries, like, Parrish absolutely has a chance to be a CFF relevant back if this team does score a lot of points. Very much, in my opinion, a watch list guy. Don't know if I'm ready to put him as like a waiver ad or anything like that, but definitely a guy I will be watching over the next week. On the Sam Houston side here, boy, if I thought that we whiffed on the Iowa State wide receiver situation, the Sam Houston wide receiver situation, good freaking Lord, it's an absolute mess, man. Just listing off the top wide receivers here, Avion Smith-Mack. Anybody draft him in any of your leagues? He had 5 targets last night for 27 yards. Ooh, super exciting. 6.8 yards per catch. Grady O'Neal, anybody? 5 targets, 50 yards, you know, 3 catches. Anybody? Rayfield Lawton, that's a tight end. 2 targets, 1 catch, 36 yards. Anybody? Oh, there's Quavez Humphrey. You know, 2 targets, 1 catch, 9 yards. Where's Malik Phillips? Oh, he is all the way down there with a single target and 0 catches and one of the lowest snap counts on the team. Yay! we are completely whiffing on this wide receiver room this offseason. So all those shots I took at Quavez Humphrey and Malik Phillips seem to be completely kaput. That's great, though. That opens up on leagues where I have waivers, and I did take those guys, pretty easy for me to drop those guys and go find somebody else that pops off here in week one. It really doesn't help as well. Like, in addition to them kind of spreading the ball out and there's not really being a clear main guy here, Hunter Watson's passing ability, I think, really does make this whole thing of incredible liability, right? He had 30 pass attempts last night, just over 200 yards, completed 19 of them, no touchdowns, seven yards per attempt. Like, he's just not a great passer, which, I think is going to hurt the wide receivers in the long term. I don't think any of these wide receivers are really standing out anyway. So, like I said, like all Sam Houston wide receivers, if you have them on your team and you're able to drop them, drop them. We're going to have to wait and see if anyone emerges from this wide receiver room down the line. I'm sure that'll be a part of our waiver series in the future. But for right now, there's zero reason to keep any of them. You likely took them as like a last five-round pick anyway. So no real reason to hold on to any of these guys. We'll see how it plays out from here. Last game to discuss here is the Stanford versus Hawaii game, our quote-unquote late-night game. It started at 9. I'll really just kind of dive into my takeaways from each of these teams rather than like anything in particular. But for Hawaii, how are y'all feeling about Micah Alahato and this Hawaii offense after the game yesterday? I found it very interesting that it seemed like there was kind of some split opinion on what, one, were the expectations for this Hawaii defense or Hawaii offense up against Stanford, but also necessarily what constitutes success, but also two, like, it feels like people are looking at that performance through different lenses yesterday. Like, I personally have some concerns here, right? I mentioned in my article that if this offense could be successful against Stanford, they'll be golden the rest of the way against the Mountain West. Well, like I said, the results, in my opinion, were so-so at best, concerning at worst, I would say. Like, Alejandro yesterday threw 39 times and only had 210 yards and two touchdowns. A pitiful, pitiful 5.4 yards per attempt, right? This was part of what made Alejandro so intriguing. In the one game he started last year, he was throwing like 9.5 yards per attempt. Actually, it might have been higher than that. I think it was double-digit yards per attempt. And while, you know, we all took that with a grain of salt because it was New Mexico's defense, right? Like, it was the big difference between him and Shager. Like, Shager, it felt like, you know, there was no ceiling to this offense with Shager because, you know, he always took the shallow routes. He didn't really put the ball down the field too much. Versus when Alejandro came in, that's what they did. There was a lot higher A-dot targets. And then last night, I wouldn't have been shocked if it turned out that Braden Shager was back out there with the way that this offense was playing. Not a single wide receiver on this team last night, including the ones on the outside, had above 10 yards per catch last night. Just shockingly inefficient across the board, which, like I said, that was the knock on Shager in this offense the last couple of years. And then now it seems like history is repeating itself here. I know a lot of people were excited about Pafele Ashlock last week. You know, he had 10 targets in this game, 9 catches, 69 yards and a touchdown. That's great that he got 10 targets, but that's what he's been doing the last 2 years. He's gotten 120 targets each of the last 2 years. The problem is that he's so inefficient that it doesn't translate to CFF success like we want it to, right? Jackson Harris, the outside wide receiver, got 8 targets, 6 catches, 59 yards. Still didn't break above 10 yards per catch. I like Harris. I do think he's worth picking up. But then you look at Nick Senecal, another guy that people liked. 5 targets, 3 catches, 12 yards, 4 yards per reception. Like, I get it. It's Stanford's defense, but it's also Stanford's defense, right? This is a Power 4 defense. Yes, it is also expected to be one of the worst Power 4 defenses, and quite frankly, could be the talent level that we see across the board in the Mountain West. I don't necessarily see what exactly is going on here. I know Alejandro got banged up. I know some people are saying that he was, you know, playing on one leg yesterday and stuff like that. I haven't looked too much into that injury here yet. But at the same time, like, again, I look at these wide receivers. Only Jackson Harris had an ADOT above 10. Ashlock and Senecal had ADOTs of 5.3 yards and 3.8 yards, respectively. There's just no real drive to push the ball down the field. And I have to ask, why? Is this a coaching decision? Is this an Alejandro problem? Like, I don't get why, after 3 to 4 years, Timmy Chang has not gotten a quarterback that he feels comfortable putting the ball down the field with. Right? Again, I get it, Stanford. And yes, they did win the game, right? But I don't know. Maybe I'm rambling too much here, but like, I really was just not impressed overall. If you're starting a guy like Ashlock in a PPR league, yeah, you're fine. You got 9 receptions. Whoop-de-doo, you got your free 9 points there. But if you're in a standard league, like, you can't be excited by what Ashlock did last night. You can't be excited by what Harris did last night. These guys got, you know, 12.9 and 11.9 fantasy points. These are not guys that you felt like were worth, you know, picking up early in drafts, right? So, again, I don't have an answer on why this team seemed to be so conservative yesterday, and I hope it changes down the line. But as of right now, I definitely feel more concerned about this offense today than I did before this game started, right? So that's my ramble. That's my talk about Hawaii. Again, I hope things get better. We'll talk about Stanford real quick. I didn't really have one clear takeaway, and it was really because it was hard to take away from what we see from Stanford. There's a lot of things that kind of play into this. One thing I did take away, though, I think the Sam Roush tight end dream seems to have died a quick and painless death. He had 7 targets yesterday, 3 receptions, 6 yards. They were playing against Hawaii's defense. Hawaii's defense is one of the worst in the league the last couple of years. Like, if Roush is getting shut down by Hawaii's defense, like, I don't have much faith that he'll do much going forward. But in addition to, you know, Roush getting shut down by Hawaii's defense, a lot of it has to do with Dr. Gulbranson, the quarterback for Stanford, being legitimately one of the worst starting quarterbacks I've seen from a Power 5 team or Power 4 team in just a while. I didn't know it was possible to have only 3.6 yards per attempt. How do you, as a scholarship-owning quarterback in the Power 4, throw it 30 times and barely break 100 yards passing? That is just mind-blowing to me. Like, it's also mind-blowing to me as well, because, like, what did Elijah Brown do? Like, Elijah Brown's a backup quarterback at Stanford. We liked him coming in as a freshman. What did he do to not get snaps over this guy? Like, you know, Brown, when he played last year, you know, wasn't a world beater by any stretch, but he was better than what we got from a Gulbranson last night, and we never saw him come in. It was super, super weird. The other super weird thing is Micah Ford. Micah Ford, for those that don't know, is a starting running back for Stanford this year. I'm not quite sure how to work with him right now. Stanford had nothing really working last night again, especially because of Gulbranson, except for their run game. And Michael Ford was a huge part of that. He had 26 rush attempts for 113 yards and a touchdown, right? Not a wowing performance with that 4.3 yards per attempt, but him getting 26 carries is pretty intriguing. And this is a team that seems like if they're going to want to win games, they're going to have to run the ball. So I'm kind of intrigued with Ford, but I also question how lucky Stanford's going to kind of get with this game script to put him in that scenario. Like, Hawaii won the game yesterday, but Stanford led for a good chunk of this game, and so they were able to kind of be in that situation where they can try to grind clock, keep Hawaii's possessions down to a minimum there. But at the same time, like, I am intrigued by the fact that he got 26 carries. It's just, I don't know that game script's ever going to be there for Stanford again, right? Like, their only other G5 matchup they have is San Jose State, and otherwise, it is ACC, but at the same time, like, if they can't put up 20, or, actually, no, their offense only put up 13 points against Hawaii. Maybe I'm not so high on Ford, because I don't really want to get a starting running back for a team that's only going to put up 13 fantasy points. Or put up 13 points against the likes of Hawaii's defense. So, yeah, not sure I'm really super excited about that, even with the high volume there. Who knows? We'll see. Anyway, that's enough of the takeaways from the Week 0 games. Got a couple bit of fall news camps here, really 2 big ones, and I'll be honest, there hasn't really been a ton of, like, big fall news camp this past week that you guys probably already haven't heard, right? We're going to discuss Drew Mestemaker winning the quarterback job for North Texas here briefly. We're going to discuss Quentin Joyner going down for Texas Tech. But just frankly, those two pieces of news came the day after last week's CTN, so I couldn't put them in last week's CTN, obviously. And then now it's been almost a week since that news came out, so you've probably heard really good analysis from the likes of, you know, like the CFF site, other podcasts on the Campus to Canton network. So I'll probably repeat some of what they say and everything, but and I'll give my own thoughts here. But for the most part, there's nothing really truly groundbreaking except for some of the quarterback battles that I'll kind of run through pretty quickly here. But first things first, again, we'll start with the Drew Messemaker quarterback winning the starting job for North Texas. Gotta admit, the ring the hubris bell for me on this one, because I called this wrong. I was fully in on Poffenbarger winning this job, and, you know, as it is strange, like, I really should have played this so much differently. I should have known better, because the echoes of this compared to the Washington State quarterback competition last year, where I was highly in on Mateer winning the job over the FCS transfer coming in, they were very strong in hindsight. And quite frankly, I kind of played this the opposite of what I did. For some reason, the longer this competition went on, the stronger I felt it was going to be Poffenbarger. And I actually stopped drafting Messemaker as a backup or a handcuff to Poffenbarger in certain leagues. And it's really come back to bite me on the butt. When in reality, the situation is, like, the longer it went on, should have told me, hey, if Poffenbarger hasn't pulled away from a, you know, former walk-on safety playing quarterback, that's a bit of a concern. The fact they haven't named the starter is pretty concerning. So anyway, I'll fully admit I'm wrong on this one. So now what does this mean? I know most of you have done your drafts already, but really with this news, one, Messemaker becomes must-own. He moves to quarterback 13 in my rankings, and I still have some reservations that, you know, he'll keep the job the whole year. But as of now, the ceiling of being a dual-threat quarterback in this Eric Morris offense is too much to ignore. He'll be a top... If he starts the whole year, there's a very good chance he's a top 15 quarterback by the end of the year. So, yeah, must own if he's somehow available in your leagues. I'll run through some starting quarterback news that has kind of come through here real quick. CJ Carr did end up winning the quarterback one job for Notre Dame. For those of you who want some analysis on this, I would go and check out me and Tom Harvey's discussion last week in terms of what was going to happen with this quarterback battle, what it would mean if each guy won it. So won't go too much into depth there. Steve Angeli being quarterback one for Syracuse, one, a bit of a surprise. I really did think that Ricky Collins was going to hold on to that job. Another one that I just kind of called wrong here. I didn't draft a ton of Ricky Collins, so I don't feel too bad about it. But I will say this. With Steve Angeli winning this quarterback one job, I think it takes away some uncertainty with this offense. Yes, there's still a question of how much are they going to throw. What is the target distribution going to look like for these receivers? All those questions are still up in the air. I do think with Collins, the floor was much lower, and so there was a chance that this offense could just outright stink. Versus Angeli, I think we can now project a pretty safe floor, and I think you can feel better about some of y'all drafting the likes of, like, you know, Daryl Gill, Jonte Cook, and, you know, Justice Ross Simmons and stuff like that. So that is newsworthy to me. Missouri, Bo Pribula and Sam Horm are going to split drives in the opener versus Central Arkansas. This is obviously not something anybody that has been drafting Bo Pribula wants to hear. I have a couple shares myself from later in drafts. Definitely hoping that Pribula will end up winning this job, but keep an eye out for that. Joey Aguilar was named quarterback one for Tennessee. That'll excite some of you. I'm not particularly excited about Tennessee's offense this year. A bit of a surprise was Cam Fancher winning the job for UCF. I know a lot of us were kind of interested in Taven Jackson winning that job for UCF, but it does appear that this staff is going to go with a guy that has experience, you know, at Marshall, FAU. I feel like that it's going to provide them a really low ceiling, but, you know, I'm also not on that staff, so I'm not there in practice every day, and I can't see what they see. True freshman, Jaron Keawe Sagapolutele, is now quarterback one for Cal. I have no idea if that's going to become a CFF relevant position. I don't really trust Cal's offense this year. We'll see. Bishop Davenport quarterback one for South Alabama. I didn't think there was much question about this, but he was officially named the starter. Malachi Nelson actually finally starting for a team in the FBS. He will be the starting quarterback for UTEP. He does beat out incumbent starter Skylar Locklear, which I do think is a little noteworthy there. So clearly this isn't like them defaulting to Nelson. He did come in and beat out an incumbent. So if you somehow still, like in a dynasty league, still have Nelson on your roster, got to feel somewhat good about that, I guess. CJ Montez out of Kent State is the quarterback one there. I don't think anybody's really rostering him much anyway. Dwayne Coleman, quarterback one for Army. I've taken my fair shots on him. I think that he could be fun in that offense. And then some more quarterbacks here. Quarterback one for Louisiana is Walker Howard. Chase Jenkins was named quarterback one for Rice. Jack Lane was named quarterback one for New Mexico, and Dexter Williams was named as the starting quarterback for Kennesaw State. That one might be a little interesting because KSU is transferring over to a veer and shoot system this year. Williams can run a little bit. They're playing in this USA. We'll see how things work out there. That's the last of the quarterback news. Again, just a little bit of running back news. We'll talk about the Quentin Joyner ACL tear here. Just first and foremost, this sucks. You hate to see it. Hope he gets better soon. But, you know, naturally, everybody asking about this wants to know, who's up next? What do we do about this, Jared? I drafted him as my RB1 in a league, and now I'm down my top running back. How do I fix this? The names to know for Texas Tech, though, are Jacoby Williams and Cameron Dickey, right? If you've listened to other podcasts, you've probably heard those names plenty. They both came in as part of the same class. Last year, Dickey played in 10 games, 42 rush attempts, 227 yards, you know, about 5.4 yards per carry. Jacoby Williams played in 9 games, 40 attempts, 225 yards, and, you know, about 5.6 yards per attempt. Very similar across the board, although Jacoby Williams was playing or was kind of Williams was kind of performing on a per game basis, particularly the bowl game. He looked great in the bowl game, 15 carries, 123 yards, and a touchdown in that one against Arkansas. So, you know, not against a nobody or anything like that. The million-dollar question just becomes, how do we reshape, how do we redistribute the carries in this backfield? Like, my initial thoughts was, you know, my initial depth chart is, you know, Joyner, Williams, Dickey. So you just slide everyone up one spot, right? So it would be, you know, Williams, Dickey, and then whoever ends up being that RB3 there. However you were distributing that before, you now distribute it that way, where whatever you're going to give Joyner, you give to Williams. Whatever you're going to give to Williams, you give to Dickey. But I don't think it's as easy as that, though. Like, as I mentioned, despite Williams looking really good in the bowl game, throughout the season, Williams and Dickey were relatively close in overall production, so I don't think there's a clear pecking order between those two. And then secondly, even if the order really was solidified as Joyner, Dickey, Williams beforehand, who's to say Dickey doesn't leapfrog Williams in that order and just do what Joyner was set to do? Now, you might be asking me, Jared, why would you say that? It has everything to do with size and skill set. Like, Dickey matches much more what Joyner was going to be able to bring to his backfield than Williams does. Dickey is 5'10", 215 pounds. Meanwhile, Williams is the lightning in your stereotypical thunder-lightning backfield duo here, being 30 pounds lighter at 185 pounds and the better receiver. So there's a decent shot that Dickey, instead of everybody sliding up one, it is that Dickey just leapfrogs and he's now the power back. Right, and he gets what Joyner was going to get in the season. I think they're both worth drafting. Obviously, neither one should be drafted nearly as high as what Joyner was going in drafts. I already thought Joyner was going a little high in drafts. So this kind of auto-corrects everything to where they probably should have been going. I have Williams with the edge right now. I do think I'm still going to rely on the fact that he looked really solid in that bowl game last year. But I think, you know, either one of them as like your fourth or fifth running back, just really anywhere on your bench, I think it's fine. If you can, potentially just draft both of them and just see how it goes the first week. But otherwise, yeah, like that's the best I can say on what to do if, you know, Joyner went down for you. Again, if you're a poor guy who drafted Dylan Edwards and Quentin Joyner to start your draft, like, God bless you. God bless you, man. All right. With that, we're right about an hour, so I will say we have come to the end of our show. I appreciate all of you guys for listening. If you have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus to Canton podcast network of shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here on Tuesday nights, where we'll have the first of those live streams to ask Start Sit questions. We'll see how it goes. I hope it goes well and everything. But until then, really appreciate all of you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.